Welcome to the second tape for the PDH online course, U.S. National CAD Standard NCS 3.1-07 for electrical design. We are here to work our way through the U.S. National CAD Standard version 3.1, dated April 2007. The full standard can be purchased from the National Institute of Building Sciences at 1090 Vermont Avenue Northwest, Suite 700, Washington, D.C., 2005-4905. Future references will be to NCS, or the standard. We will consciously skip the content, which is almost entirely for architects, and we will skip the extensive discussion of storage of electronic files and standard blocks. The standard is a 960-page PDF file running about 15 megabytes. The striking aspect is that there appear to be three unrelated documents with partial overlap published by three very different agencies. It's nearly impossible to find a specific chart or list by leafing through or by using the table of contents, any of the three tables of contents, and there's no index either for the individual sections or the overall. The flow of content is heavily flavored with committee-based philosophy, having no connection to CAD, construction documents, or successfully completing facility design projects for government bodies. This course, however, is about 30 pages, narrowly focused on CAD, construction documents, and successfully completing facility design projects for government bodies. The first author of the standard is the National Institute of Building Sciences, a quasi-governmental body created by Congress to employ politicians who lost re-election and to vaguely contribute to the aims of the American Institute of Architects. Go to their website, www.nibs.org, to see if you can find a more charitable reason for their existence. The second author is the American Institute of Architects. Architects manage large and small facility design projects. The construction documents package that goes out for bids is their work product. If it looks good and meets the needs of the client, the project is a success. If it looks good but never gets built, it qualifies the lead architect for national awards. The skills that make a good architect include extreme attention to detail and a compulsive need to organize everything into main categories, subcategories, down to the 15th sub-level. Leaf through the standard to confirm this, then go to their website, http://www.aia.org. The third author is the Construction Standards Institute. CSI is owned and operated by AIA. They publish Master Spec for the AIA and are trying to turn a profit on NCS. Go to their website, http://www.csinet.org, and check their mailing address against that of AIA. Or look at the PDH online course on the new 26-section Master Spec for discussion of the historic relationship between AIA and CSI. The last author is the Military Tri-Service CAD GIS Technology Center. I preface their organization because I keep associating tri-service with floor or wall receptacles containing telephone, data, and audiovisual jacks. The Military Tri-Service CAD GIS Technology Center published the first CAD plotting standard in 1993. The General Services Administration is the purchasing department of the U.S. government. Even when they do not handle procurement, they come along afterwards and audit the effort and report to Congress. GSA was part of version 1.0 of NCS, but is not listed with version 3.0 or 3.1. The Veterans Administration, however, is a GSA client and is very active in requiring NCS for facility projects. The list of federal and state agencies that require compliance with the standard grows daily. Adoption by large commercial firms has also begun. Because of the confusion built into the standard, a good overview is invaluable, and a list of frequently asked questions and answers would be extremely valuable. CSI has a PowerPoint slideshow providing an overview of the standard. It's available at www.csinet.org/s_csi/DOCS/6200/6190.ppt. A list of FAQ, frequently asked questions, and the answers is available at www.nationalcadstandard.org/faq.php. Before we get into the form and content of the standard, we should form a concept of the desired result. The following illustration is similar to figure 02.1 on page 219 of 960 in the copyrighted document. It's difficult to form a word picture of this, but let's try. We start with a piece of paper, any of the 20 sizes that are accepted by the National CAD standard. With it laying in front of you, we have a heavy border about a half inch in from the edge of the paper. The border is called the border and is a required component of a drawing which satisfies the standard, except that it doesn't have to be. Trim marks are adequate if the artistic needs of the architect forego use of a border. Trim marks are a little corner indicator for the top left corner and the lower right corner. Some architects, the artistic flow is so strong that they cannot tolerate a solid border separating the drawing content from the edge of the paper. Now, you and I who work with these drawings need to know if a portion of the drawing has been cut off, so there has to be a delineation on the edge of the drawing. And within the CAD standard, this can either be the border, which is more conventional, or the trim marks, which are considered acceptable. As we look at the sheet, once again, the border is about a half inch. Yeah, now I say that and that's wrong. In the standard, they give a dimension on how far in it is. It's a little more than half an inch. I always say a half inch because when I trim sheets, I trim it to a half inch and it looks right and it fits into the set. But the actual number is a little different. The drawing is offset for being centered on the paper. There is a wider margin on the left side than on the right side. It's approximately a half inch uniform top, right, and bottom. It's approximately an inch and a quarter on the left. This is called binding margins. And the reason is in a large set, a full-size print set, you will put a stick, you know, a crank it down metal stick that goes into a drawing rack to hold the set together and keep them in proper order. In a reduced set, it may be bound either with the little punch binding things or spiral bindings or fit into a three-ring notebook. But again, binding margins are recommended by the standard, though not required. In the extra space created on the left-hand side of the drawing, there is a box called the plot box. Now, I call it the plot box because other people call it the plot box. In the National CAD standard, it's called plot information. This is an optional function of AutoCAD and probably some other plotting programs that if you click it on your plot selection screen, it will report the location on the computer that the file came from, which is being plotted. It's the full path, indicating the name of the machine it's on, the root directory, and each of the subdirectories. Now, this is extremely valuable, just valuable beyond belief, because it identifies the internal project number of the document, so that if you want to find the original this was plotted from, see if it's been revised since then, the full path tells you where to find the original document for that comparison. Now, I say project number, and there's nothing here about project number. Well, that's because most organizations file their drawings by the project number. So the location could be S, if S is the network drive that contains project files, and it could be project 35077, whatever the designation is, and it might be phase one, electrical, and then the drawing number. And all this would be in the plot information. The standard suggests a lot more information in the plot information. We'll get into that in that section. The drawing contains one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight boxes along the right-hand side. Now, I say boxes because we draw them out as boxes when we're talking about the shape and form of the drawing. In the actual drawing, you don't have to have delineation separating the eight sections. The eight sections are as follows. The design firm. Contact information for the design firm. I find this wonderful and an improvement beyond belief. Again, in the special mindset that makes up an architect, they want a flowing script and logo for their design firm, but they don't want to tell you how to contact them. The standard says put an email address in there, put a street address, identify the city, and a phone number. And, of course, this is optional so that architects can keep issuing drawings without any way to contact them if they choose to. Below the box for the design firm is the design sub-consultants, often mechanical, electrical, and plumbing. The kind of work I normally do is a sub to a larger architectural firm. Sometimes it's within the firm, and then you'd have your telecommunications guy in this block if it was a telecommunications sheet. Seals. If the drawing requires professional seals, there's a space reserved for them. If it's not used, you can reorient the entire border or leave it if somebody decides later they need seals. Project information. In this sense, this is things like the client's project number, name of the location, the street address of the location, things that you normally see on a drawing, but it has a designated location within the standard. Revision history. This refers to what changes have been made since it was first released, so that there's a good chance you would find both sheets floating around in the construction trailer. Which one do you have in your hand? Looking at the one that has the latest revision, at least you can compare two of them side by side. You may not have the latest one, but you know which one you have. The sheet name, and this is specified in the standard. Things like first floor, electrical, plan view, or 480-volt plan, something like that. The sheet number is located in the bottom box on the right-hand side, and my addition, not part of the standard, it also is located in the top left corner of the drawing. Why is this? Because so often I am working with scans or prints, and they have been trimmed in such a way that it trims off the title block. So I know that it's the right building. I can tell by the shape of the foundation, but I really don't know which project it's from, which discipline it's from. I mean, it's a wonderful mystery to work with these drawings that have been inadvertently trimmed to cut off the title block. By putting the sheet number in the top left corner, you can identify which set it's from and where it fits in the set. Doesn't tell you which revision you've got in your hand, but at least gives you a starting point. Some of the larger firms already require this, and it works so nice when it's present. I would add it to the standard. I did, even though I didn't talk to the nice people who published the standard. Beyond that, the workspace on the drawing is divided into modules. Now, wait a minute. What's modules here? It is a concept of smaller units of the drawing. The piece of paper, not defining which piece of paper we're using, is broken into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 blocks wide, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 blocks high. Now, this is in landscape orientation. If you were in portrait orientation, it would be turned. But it's still 6 by 5 or 5 by 6. And we don't have to draw the marks on it to separate it this way. But as we populate the drawing, as we fill it with content, we try to fill it in modular units. So if we're doing a schedule, what would we do a schedule of? On a recent job I did, they wanted each discipline to list which cranes by the number and the area served. So just a little list of crane references, because we would tell how we're wiring up crane number 7. Well, they want to know which is crane number 7. So crane number 7 was in bay such and such, lifting such and such a part. So we had to put the crane schedule on each of the sheets that referenced the crane circuitry. Well, the crane schedule would fit in one or two of these modules, or three or four of the modules, but it would not be centered on the modules so that a half module was left blank on each side. It would be oriented in a modular form. Everything in the standard supports the statement of compliance. This is a short document which is supposed to appear on the cover page of the set of drawings. Please bring up the worksheet that accompanies this course as the discussion continues. Now, I've done this. The worksheet is intended to be distributed separately from the course. I'm hoping the worksheet persists long after you've moved past the course. The worksheet is a checklist of identifying each of the things you've done right. It is the statement of compliance showing you what's supposed to be on the sheet. And it's the important examples that I found within the course, the things like the line weights and the layer designators and stuff like that. So I'm looking at the worksheet as I'm doing this. I would hope that it has enough value to persist after you're done with the course. If you're driving 65 miles an hour down the interstate, please don't bring up the worksheet, but you might want to glance at it next time you pull into a rest stop. The statement of substantial compliance conformance that goes on the first sheet has the wording, "The design professional responsible for issuing this set of construction documents certifies that the presentation conforms to the guidelines of the U.S. National CAD standard to the extent indicated below." There are 10 compliance categories. Under that is an information section, client name, client project number, project address, design professional name, design professional address, design professional phone, fax, and email. And then we get into the individual sections for which you must claim compliance. Now, again, the actual standard does not include the checkboxes for the individual components that make up each of the 10 categories. First category is layers. We'll look at layers in substantial detail. 10 categories are listed with suggested answers of full compliance or partial compliance. Now, in the original standard, it says full compliance or partial compliance. On the worksheet, each category also contains non-conformance, should a design firm choose to include the form but not even try to get a good grade. And this is not as silly as it sounds. The standard would force some architectural firms to discard peculiarities which have identified their work for many decades. Such firms might well accept design fees without modifying tradition. The 10 categories relate to layer names, use of layers, sheet grouping and numbering, content and layout of a typical sheet, form of schedules, that is lists, plotting, line weights and custom line types, abbreviations, symbols, notes, and codes. The list with level of claimed compliance for each category is followed by a signature block. We will examine each category and the measurable attributes created for this course which are not part of the standard. The standard trusts the design professional project manager to use repeatable judgment for largely undefined measures. The first category is layer names and use of layers. The goal is to be able to honestly say full compliance after the category head layers. Note that the requirements of the standard are worded in very optional language, using terms like "to the extent the project permits." We've provided 8 checklist items, an argument regarding disciplines recognized, and an argument to reposition the tag to the front of the layer name to permit sorting. Checklist item 1, discipline letter. Of the 20 permitted, attached to the worksheet is a list of the permitted letters with 2 additions. The disciplines are long-standing, though some of the letter designations appear innovative. B for geotechnical, Q for equipment, D for process, Z for shop drawings. Now, I'm going to go to the worksheet and scroll down. I'm on the screen where if you may have a piece of paper in your hand, to the section on the layer naming format and the layer first character identifiers. I've got a graphic in here on the layer naming format that shows what a typical layer looks like. A layer name would be EP-POWR-BUSW-PLUG-N. Now, if you've worked in a large firm, this isn't too strange. It's very common to use a very similar form on large projects. However, on small projects and small firms that are very tightly focused on a niche market, it's also common to use layer names like 252. That would be the entire name of the layer. Or E-Lights, which again is very descriptive and totally meets the needs, but it's not in compliance with the standard. Now, again, some of these are standard, so E-Lights, in fact, would be compliant, but the full form in extension to handle large projects has a first identifier, an optional secondary identifier, a main category, a secondary category, an optional third category, an optional tag, and in the optional tag, I listed the alternate choices that you could use. And again, we'll talk about that in just a moment. First character names, which what we were talking about exactly. G is general. And again, this has been around forever. This is codifying the way it's been done by the large firms by the accepted standard, except now it's written down and it's called an AIA document, with some distinct changes. V for surveying and mapping, B for geotechnical, W for civil works, C for civil works, L for landscaping, S for structural, A for architectural, I for interior. Now, this is the first one that really, really raises my eyebrows. I do an awful lot of utility work, that is water and wastewater plants. I has always been instrumentation. But then we don't have too much upholstered furnitures in water and wastewater plants. I is interiors if we're complying with a standard. Q is equipment. F is fire protection. Again, I'm used to FP for fire protection. Every job I've ever worked on has FP for fire protection. I know where to go to find out where the flow switches are that go into my fire alarm. Well, it's not going to be FP anymore. It's going to be F. FP suggests that it's a P suffix, not P as part of the first designator. P is plumbing. D is process. M is mechanical. E is electrical. T is telecommunications. Those people have been lobbying for so long to get their own discipline, and they've won. Is telecommunications the same as data? I think we're still 10 or 15 years behind. The telecommunications has been recognized. Data is either a sub to them or a sub to electrical, or somebody doesn't get their own prefix. R is resource. X is other disciplines. Z is contractor and shop drawings. O is operations. I've suggested Y for security. And P for instrumentation and controls. The reason I do this is the electrical designer usually doesn't do security. You bring in somebody who's a specialist in security that knows things about infrared illuminators and the infrared response of closed-circuit TV cameras and things like access control. They get real, real fancy on these access control systems. I don't know if you've ever dug into that, but you'll have a keypad or equivalent, you know, a little magnetic card or RF card, and that lets you in, but it also sends a signal down to the central location that the person with this designation is now inside the plant, so they know how many bodies to drag out if they have an explosion. Also, it opens the door for a limited length of time, and then it latches the thing again, and it alarms if it doesn't latch properly. I mean, there's a tremendous complication in these access control systems. Ordinary electrical engineers don't do this. Ordinary electrical engineers run the pipes for it and let a specialist in access control or security do the security. Now, if we're going to issue that under the electrical drawing set, it's going to be an impossible task to get those specialists to conform to our drafting standards. I would rather let the project manager try to get them to comply to the project drafting standards, which also isn't going to work, but at least it's his grief instead of my grief. If we put it inside the electrical set, then you ask the electrical guy, why doesn't this match the rest of your sheets? Well, it's not my sheet. You can't say that. If it's in your set, it's one of your sheets. If it's in the project, it's one of the firm sheets. I mean, it's a failure if the drafting doesn't match the rest of the set. Is it the failure of the project manager or the failure of the electrical design lead? I propose that the electrical design lead's supposed to do wires. Boy, that's covering my tail, isn't it? Instrumentation and controls. Again, if you're familiar with industrial projects, instrumentation and controls is an extremely complex field. It has people that do nothing but study instrument and controls all their life to make sure that the stuff works right. Putting it as a sub to electrical, to me, it's just a slap in their face. That's what the standard says, and we will follow that if we want to list full compliance. Let's see what it says in the course text. Your instructor's argument is that the lack of recognized disciplines for security and instrumentation and controls. Work in each of these areas is done by a specialty group or outside subcontractor. Lumping them within electrical makes sheet renumbering after changes difficult and emphasizes the minor differences in typical drawings among the three groups. Telecommunications gets its own letter, so should security, so should instrumentation and control. Hey, that was a good day I wrote that paragraph, because you do add sheets to a set. Typically, in the very last days, just before you issue a set, you find something that was overlooked or something that grew from one sheet to two sheets, and you have to renumber your section of the set. Well, if somebody out there is starting from 200 in your set and suddenly you take 201 for your use, all of their sheets have to be renumbered. That's not going to make them happy, and it's not going to help the quality of the project, and it's totally unnecessary. If it was their set, they'd renumber when it was to their advantage and they wouldn't complain about it. If it's our set and they renumber when I say so, they're going to be unhappy campers. I don't need that on a project. The prototype drawing number shown on the appendix to the worksheet has nominally six fields: main discipline, sub-discipline, main category, optional subcategory, optional third category, optional tag. Permitted subcategory designators are listed in the appendix. Now, I think we're talking about layers here rather than drawing numbers. Yes, we are talking about layers here. Let's look at the subcategories for electrical. Now, remember, each of the other disciplines has subcategories as well. E is electrical. That's the main category. You do not have to have a subcategory because it's optional. On a small project, it would probably be good practice to have secondary identifiers. Yes, it would be a good idea to have secondary identifiers even on a small project. ES is electrical site. ED is electrical demolition. EP is electrical power. EL is electrical lighting. EI is electrical instrumentation, and you heard my complaint about that. ET is electrical telecommunications. Why, yes, telecommunications is their own category, but there is an ET layer and an ET drawing in the standard for electrical. EY is electrical auxiliary systems. EJ is electrical user defined. EK is electrical user defined. And I'm saying EY might be electrical security. Now, the confusion I had just a moment ago about the drawing number and the drawing layer. They use the same first and second designators. That's where the confusion arises. There is no confusion. They're the same. It is one set of learning that applies to both of them. We had been talking about layers, so I thought we were talking about first and second identifiers for layers, and I said in the text first and second identifiers for drawing numbers. But they are the same first and second identifiers. So there really is no confusion here. The second argument your instructor has for the standard is the location of tag as the last field. Now, what is the tag for the last field? Typically, it's N for new and E for existing. Or it can be things like phase 1, phase 2, phase 3, if you have different layers that are part of the timing of the project, that you want to show the phase one guy the stuff he has to do. Then when that's done, you turn that off to not confuse the phase two guy. You show the phase two guy what he's supposed to do, and either you change the color of the phase one to make it real light or just turn it off completely. But the argument here is the location of this tag, N for new or E for existing. A common use in massively large projects is the phase number or bid package number. In such massive projects, the infrastructure, that is boilers, chillers, cooling towers, bulk power distribution, may be designed, bid, and placed on order before the interior space has been laid out or as leases are being negotiated. Then office space, maybe restaurants and shops, will be designed. The space designs create bulletins or change orders on the construction already underway. Having multiple stages taking place concurrently means that a single electrical plan drawing may be used for four or more bid packages at the very same time. It's desirable to keep all the information on a single sheet to ensure consistency of notation and coordination among various wall switches, pull stations, speaker volume controls, data and telephone equipment. In an industrial job, the main conveyor may be ordered as a bid package, the bridge rails and hoists as a separate package, coolant supply and return as a package, mist collection as a package, machining cells as a package, and assembly tool installation as a package. Compressed air and electrical are common to all. Now, what does this have to do with the location of the bid package designator in a layer definition? Well, if the standard is followed, the tag is at the far end of the layer name, and it cannot be used to sort and turn off individual package layers for issue. If it is moved forward, perhaps right after the main discipline, that means that E-BP100-POWR-CIRC and all of the EBP100 layers will be grouped before all of the EBP200 layers. The inherent alphabetic listing of layers automatically sorts the bid package within the discipline. So when we're issuing a revision for bid package 100, we just look at our layer list. Alphabetically, E-100 are all together, E-200 are all together, we're issuing E-100, BP-100, so we turn off all of the E-BP-200 layers. Check to make sure it looks right, and plot the drawing. When we want to do 200, we turn on the 200 layers, turn off the 100 layers, and we can do that. And this is almost a flick of the wrist kind of thing to solve a very complex problem, but it only works if you move the phase designator tag up to the front. Now, the mechanical guy I'm working with moves it all the way to the front. So the first thing you see on his drawing layer list is BP100-M- whatever he's working on. Well, I don't like that because it's been beaten into me for 30 years that the only things I'm allowed to touch start with an E. So all of the electrical layers start with an E. I look at his drawings because he does some things a lot better than I do, and I like to take it off of his drawing and put it on my drawing. So I look at his drawings, but I never, ever mess with his designations or his files or his layer naming. And honestly, I don't want people messing with mine. So I always start my layers with an E. I start my blocks when I insert blocks in a drawing with an E. Those are my stuff. If it's wrong, tell me about it. Give me a chance to fix it. But don't just go in there and muck around with it. And again, that's my reasoning. If we're going to layer according to the standard, if we're going to use layer names according to the standard, let's start out with a discipline, and then let's use a tag that we can use for sorting if we're going to issue them separately. Permitted electrical sub-discipline names are as follows: E for electrical, ES for electrical site, ED for electrical demolition, EP for electrical power, EL for lighting, EI for instrumentation. Remember, I as a main heading is reserved for interiors. ET for electrical telecommunications, though telecommunications gets its own discipline listing. EY for electrical auxiliaries, EJ for user-defined, EK for user-defined, and nothing for security. In the layer section, your instructor has added three good practice requirements not found in the standard. They are GNOREFR, that's G-ANNO-REFR, used for insertion of external references so that everybody puts their XREFs on the same layer. GNOVPRIT, G-ANNO-VPRT, used for defining viewports, so you know exactly where to look at to turn on and off your viewports. And layer zero is used for construction, not for issue drawings. These, to me, are obvious requirements. They've been long-standing requirements. They are an essential part of good drafting practice, and they should be part of the standard. No, they're not part of the standard, but again, you're taking this course to hear what I think, and that's what I think. To me, these are obvious requirements of good layer use and should be mandated. This concludes part two of the audio presentation. We're going to get into sheet grouping and numbering next. I'm going to take a break, and I suggest you do the same.